This is the London FinTech Podcast, brought to you by your host, Mike Ballaman, bridging the worlds of suits and t-shirts, of finance and technology, bringing you insights, stories, and inspiration from the golden age of opportunity and innovation happening in London right now.
Hi, this is Mike Ballaman, and this is London FinTech Podcast, episode 64, proudly brought to you in association with Archover, Smart Pension, and Synchron. I'm delighted to be joined once more today by Peter Renton, who perhaps has more of a broad and deep understanding of P2P worldwide than anyone. When Peter first came on the show back in LFP 015, he shared with us the fascinating history of US P2Ps with its hugely up and down roller coaster road. Since then, he's literally gone global wearing his Lendit conference hat. 4 years in the States, 3 years of conferences in China, 3 years in Europe, and just recently, the largest ever European P2P event, Lendit Europe 2016, which attracted over 900 attendees and almost 200 speakers. And nor is he, as it were, just a conference organizer. He partnered up to add that skill set to his firm. Peter is not just perhaps the longest standing blogger on P2P in the world, but also a very long-term personal investor and the man with a golden global Rolodex. So as my intros seem to be getting longer and longer, let's have a shorter one today. And without further ado, let's dive into the zeitgeist, the spirit of the age in P2P worldwide as the winter starts to draw in on the Northern Hemisphere in 2016. Plenty to talk about, so let's get on with the show. Hi, Peter. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
So I was talking about Lendit and what an amazing achievement it's been. And recently I was talking to a CEO who had been incredibly successful, and I said, well, congratulations on the incredible success, but one problem with the incredible success is then people say, so what are you going to do next? It's a bit like a fund manager, actually. When I was a fund manager, people say, oh, great performance, Mike, so what's next quarter? It's probably like being an actor on stage. Oh, I loved you in that film, so what's your next film kind of stuff? You can never kind of get there somehow.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's always a challenge, obviously. You put on an event and you certainly don't want to repeat what you've done before. You want to break new ground. And I feel like that's kind of what we attempt to do with every conference. We try to bring in, you know, a couple of really big names who have never spoken before, and we try and cover where we think the industry is going, and you know, that differs from year to year. And I feel like we try and capture the sort of the pulse of the industry wherever it's at and where we think it's going.
Yeah, good. Well, we'll come on to the pulses around the world in a minute, because the pulses, the beans, are slightly different in the three territories we mentioned, and also slightly similar as well. And I was very grateful to be invited onto your very professional podcast recently as the guest, where I found that actually it's much easier being the host, because you can sort of sit there and sound clever and ask clever sounding questions. As the guest, you've got to come up with some bloody answer, actually. So that was always a useful and humbling experience for me. And in terms of our relative knowledge of the world, you asked me pretty much to do a tour d'horizon, an overview of London, and you having a slightly more knowledge, I'm asking you to do an overview of the entire world, which is roughly the ratio of how much you know about it to how much I know about it.
Well, I'm not sure about that. But
but you do go around the world. And we were talking about the podcasting, actually, when you had your usual successful drinks in London a little while ago leading up to this conference. And in terms of podcasting, you were saying that yours has always been, for one way or another, sort of slightly more corporate, and whereas, you know, covering fintech in London, I've kind of always tried to be a bit more sort of on the indie media side. And do you think that's kind of, in a way, apart from sort of reflecting personalities, actually just reflecting how the industries have grown up in the States? I mean, is peer-to-peer and marketplace lending generally been a little bit more corporate, a bit more suit and tie in America, and a bit more indie over here?
I think that's probably a fair statement. In the US, it's now more than 10 years old for some of the major companies, and they deal with large banks, they deal with regulators on a regular basis. They don't want to wear t-shirts and jeans in these conversations. They want to be taken seriously. They don't want to be considered sort of just, oh, we're the new kid on the block. They want to be considered the equivalent of a bank in reputation and in brand and those kinds of things. So with that background, I think it's fair to say that the US industry is certainly more corporate now than it was a decade ago, that's for sure.
Right. And in terms of words like alternative finance, like alternative culture is a bit like counterculture. But alternative finance now is predominantly in terms of London anyway, by and large, lots of middle-aged white men in suits. And speaking as a middle-aged white man who owns a suit, it's actually sort of relatively boring. And, you know, I was on one of your panels just now, but talking about diversity, and I don't really believe in the sort of the PC diversity. It's like trying to tell a politically correct joke. You can't. But vice versa, when everybody's the same and sort of homogeneous, then sort of innovation tends to disappear and the excitement disappears. And we're sitting here and over your shoulder I can see Canary Wharf and Barclays and HSBC and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know whether it's a bit like a teenager growing up and, you know, wanting to be sort of seen to be a grown-up or something like that, or whether it's just the first wave of innovation, as you say, is kind of cresting and it's just becoming part of the established order of financial services, another place you can go to for loans and deposits and that kind of thing, and maybe another level of innovation will arise. It's hard to say.
Well, I think when you're new but you're doing something very serious, which is managing people's money, when you're managing people's money, I think you want to be taken seriously, you want to be serious, and that whether that's a whole bunch of white men in suits seems like there's more of that than anything else, and that just, I think, is a function of where the world is when it comes to finance in general. But I think you need to be taken seriously, because if you're going to ask somebody to, you know, to take a good chunk of their life savings and take care of it for them, you want to be very serious in how you approach that. And I think that's kind of where the industry is at today.
Yes, I think so. There is virtue in being dull. I mean, if you're going to go to the theatre, and some local alternative theatre on Saturday night, you want something that's sort of fun and sexed up and all that kind of stuff. But they're not the people you're going to give $100,000 to, right, to invest or go and get a mortgage from. Or if you're going to go to a fashion show, you're going to expect it to be a little bit different. So moving on from fashion in B2B and what people are wearing, I mean, personally, I'm sort of wearing suits more than anything, and I haven't got the T-shirt out for quite a long time. That's one of the benefits of going to see my friends at Smart Pension, is they're still hanging on to their, right, their T-shirts for the moment. So if we have a little just quick sort of tour of the world, starting with your home turf, the US, you podcast every week, and I recommend your podcast on this topic. So, you know, you could talk for hours on the US, but just in terms of a little bit of a sort of summary of where we are at the moment, what do you think the main things that you'd like to share with the listeners are about where the US is in late 2016 in terms of P2P? I mean, most people will know about the problems at Lending Club and all that kind of thing, and where it's going. What is the trajectory at the moment?
So 2016 has been an interesting year in the United States for this industry. I think it started pretty early in the year where there was a pullback from the capital markets side, and for the first time in most companies' history, they were struggling to raise money to invest in these loans. So that started to happen probably February, and it really started to kick in even more in April, and then we had May 9th, which was the Lending Club incident. So we were already on a downward trajectory when that happened, and then suddenly it went down fairly dramatically from there. A lot of people that were on the sidelines thinking about investing, you know, once that happened on May 9th, they said, well, I'm just going to give it 12 months and see where we're at. No one's going to get fired for pausing or for, you know, for postponing an investment when the leading player in the industry is having some struggles. So I think we've gone through a challenging year, but you know, here we are in mid-October, and there has been an upswing. Probably the last 6 or 8 weeks, it feels like that there's some momentum coming back, investors are coming back, some of the loan volumes are starting to recover. I wouldn't say there's optimism, or certainly not unbridled optimism. I think people are cautiously optimistic in the US, but we have gone through a very difficult time. And I think what's been fascinating is people thought by now, you know, we're sort of 6 months plus into this sort of downturn, and there's going to be a shakeout. Some of these smaller platforms are just not going to make it, but they're proving to be quite resilient. And whereas I thought there might have been 4 or 5 bankruptcies by now, we've only seen one, and that was a pretty small platform. And others are proving to be pretty resilient and realizing now the focus is you've got to get to positive cash flow. You've got to do that quickly. So that's been the focus. At the start of the year was still growing, trying to find new borrowers. Now the focus is get to positive cash flow, get your compliance in place, and then you'll have a sustainable business.
Yes, it's interesting talking about that. Just before I was coming up here, I spoke to JDev, the CEO of Zopa, and in his talk this morning, he was mentioning that as of September this year, Zopa had been cash flow positive or making a small profit. And he was talking to me about the fact that they'd reprioritized making a profit. And as I said some time ago in a number of podcasts, the dirty secret of fintech is that by and large everybody's losing money, and,
right.
and by and large the VCs are getting a bit bored of putting money into holes. So everyone's had a bit more of a sort of focus on actually at least washing their face.
Right.
So they're not losing money before they go forward. He also actually was quite funny. He said to me, he said, what are you doing now? So I'm off to do a pod recording with Peter Enten. And he said, oh, good luck. And then I looked at him and he said, actually, I should probably say good luck to Peter, actually. So JDev knows me well. So before we move off the States, the other thing that I'd noticed is that there'd been some credit issues in the year as well with sort of, you know, various platforms, lower credit rating things having slightly higher defaults. I mean, what do you think that's amounted to with a little bit of hindsight and where we are at the moment?
I think with hindsight, I think the interest rates probably were reduced too far, and many platforms have misjudged, underestimated the level of defaults, not in a significant way, not in a dramatic way anyway. And I think that's being addressed. You know, just one thing about these businesses is they can move fairly quickly. I mean, both Lending Club and Prosper have done multiple adjustments this year to both their expected losses and their top line rates. And I think that's healthy. You're not going to be perfect on the, you know, projections for losses every time. And I think the industry has done a pretty good job of exceeding expectations. And there's certainly been some companies with, in some cohorts, they have not done what they expected. So it's being adjusted. It hasn't really affected a whole lot. I mean, we were talking about securitization this morning on the panel that I was moderating, and you know, it's been a record month, or we're on track for a record month for securitizations. The third quarter was a record quarter, so clearly the broader capital markets are still, you know, pretty bullish on this space.
Yes, I think it's important to remember we use occasionally the phrase marketplace lending, and in markets prices move, and it's the case in any credit market in the world that credit is a relatively illiquid market. I mean, foreign exchange, the prices move every second or less than every second, so it's always quotes repricing, for example, the dollar to sterling. It was being repriced in the wrong direction recently.
Fortunately, yes.
So I can never come and visit you in the States because I won't be able to afford a sort of half a pint of beer, let alone a pint of beer over there. So what you're talking about is a very valid point, and just in terms of setting everyone's expectations, which is that where platforms are directly and indirectly basically setting the price on varying credit qualities, the expectation of us all should be that these prices keep changing in the light of events.
Right. Right.
If they don't, it'd be a bit strange. It's, oh, we made this calculation 2 years ago, and do you know what? It's still right. Well, the world's always changing. You're always needing to shift your aim for the winds and the tides, mixing my metaphor. Okay, so those are the big things in the States. And then China, we could do a whole podcast. There probably is a sort of, you know, Beijing fintech podcast or Shanghai fintech podcast.
It's probably in
like
Mandarin, so.
Yes, exactly, yes. I wouldn't understand much of it at all, actually. So again, it's a vast thing, but many people may not be knowing much about China and P2P, and you have done a number of conferences over there. And again, without flattering you, you do have the golden Rolodex around the world in these situations. I mean, you know, most people will probably know that China is vast. The fact packet in my mind is that the US is roughly 10 times as big as the UK in this area, and that China is roughly 10 times that. So people will know it's a vast market. And I think people also know that there's, you know, tons of fraud over there and all sorts of things, but probably not much more than that. So you may want to correct these things about sort of vast and fraudulent, at least in parts, and actually then fill in all the other bits that people don't know.
Sure. Well, I mean, you're right, China is massive. And what's unique about China is that the West has had a developed credit system for the middle class for decades. I mean, you've been able to get a home loan, a car loan, personal loans of some sort in the West for a long time. Whereas in China, that isn't the case. The banking system in China is set up for large corporations and state-run enterprises.
Because it was a century-planned economy, and they used to, historically, for quite a long time, be communist-communist,
exactly,
as opposed to capitalist-communist.
Exactly.
Now.
It's still very unique in that way. The way people used to borrow money was they did it peer-to-peer in an offline manner, and there's always been a demand for capital, and now this has moved online, so you've got a massive multi-trillion dollar industry that is basically just going from offline to online in a matter of years. And they're more than doubling every year. They'll continue to more than double every year for many, many years until we do get to multi-trillions of dollars, because that's just where the demand is. And they're sort of bypassing, in some ways, the credit infrastructure that has been set up in the West. And they're moving to kind of where we will be in 5 years' time. I mean, I think when I look at China right now, I don't look at them as behind the US. In fact, I look at them as far ahead of the US in many areas. You know, for a start, everything's done on a mobile phone in China. You underwrite, you invest millions of dollars on your phone. You don't go visit a website. And that is just the way they've done business. And there's different privacy laws in China, so they can use data that we can't use in the West that would conflict with different privacy laws and what have you. So they actually have a rich amount of alternative data they can use. So I think that's something that I think we can't use their exact data, but we can sometimes learn from the principles that they're applying. And I find it endlessly fascinating the way they've developed. And the other thing is, China gets a bad rap. I mean, I think it's true. There's fraud there. There's more fraud there than there is in the West. That's just a reality. But most companies are honest and most people are honorable, and it's not like the total Wild West. And now they have put in new regulations just in the last couple of months, which is going to mean probably 90% of the industry's platforms will go out of business. So they won't be able to adhere to really what's a sensible set of regulations for the most part that most of the large platforms are in favor of. So you're going to have people talk about 3,000 platforms. You know, there's really only 100 or 150 maybe that have any consequence. The rest are just very, very small volumes, and they're not really doing a whole lot. So you're going to have these 3,000 platforms going to reduce down to maybe 150 that are sustainable for the long term. But these, there are going to be some of that 150 that are going to be very, very big. A Chinese platform will one day reach the $1 trillion mark in originations, and then they'll reach the $1 trillion mark in annual loan volume. And I think that's going to happen in this coming decade. I think both of those things will happen.
Yes, I've seen lots of stuff about Alipay's, but I can never quite remember the numbers. They've normally got too many zeros on or something.
Well, it's like 800 million users, I think, something like that, which is just insane when you think about it. No one carries cash. You can go to a street vendor who's selling newspapers or what have you, and you pay with your phone.
Oh, really?
And he will take it with his phone. No one uses cash. It's becoming a cashless society, and everything is coming through Alipay. And so you imagine the data that Alipay is sort of providing. It's a great platform to start a lending business.
Yes, it's an important point you make about sort of the fraud and all that kind of stuff. In a much bigger marketplace, everything is bigger. But in a way, part of that narrative, or part of the media narrative that one sees, is still remnants of kind of what you might actually bluntly call sort of a racist approach to China. I think I've sort of moaned in the past, maybe once in the podcast, which is that I don't follow Formula One anymore. But when you follow Formula One, whenever it was in China, they'd have these cliched images of temples and kung fu and mm-hmm. all that kind of
right.
stuff, you know? And knowing a little bit about Chinese culture myself, one way and another, it's a billion people, it's an ancient culture going back thousands of years over there. There's lots of richness and depth, there's lots of brilliance, intelligence and philosophy and all that kind of stuff. And these kind of sort of semi-imperial attitudes about, there's the first world, the second world, the third world, no one uses those phrases anymore. But they're still implicit in some of these reporting of these countries, the idea that actually somehow the West, whatever that means, is actually superior, but it's not. I mean, another example came up quite a few podcasts ago about the Indian Stock Exchange doing something really innovative. You know, there's fascinating things going on in all around the world, actually, and I think that's the interesting thing that must be for you, Peter, which is actually going around and increasingly seeing the same people over and over and again, knowing them as mates and getting a feel for what the vibe is like in these different places and what the strengths are and the weaknesses, you know?
Well, I think what's interesting about China is if you go back several hundred years, China was the largest economy in the world.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then they sort of relinquished that title and they now want it back.
And
they will get it back. And I think there's tremendous energy. You go to visit Shanghai, Beijing, or even Shenzhen, there's just so much energy, so much happening. And they're very hard workers, they're dedicated, and they want to be respected in the world.
Face is very important in China.
Yes, it very, very much is. And they want to be seen by the West as significant. And I think they are. And the trouble with the West is that they've ignored China for a long time. I remember this one little anecdote when I first came to America I'm from Australia and came to America in 1991, and I was at some sort of meeting. There was some speaker talking about how trade with Australia was more important than trade with China. Because back then, Australia had a much, much bigger trade volume with the US than China did. And now, I mean, Australia must be a tiny fraction of what China is. And China was a smaller economy back then than Australia was. And Australia's got 25 million people. And so suddenly, growth is just staggering It's clear this is China's century, I think. It's only a matter of time before China exceeds the United States in gross domestic product. And, you know, they're going to be a long way before they do, you know, GDP per capita, they'll be ahead of the US. But I wouldn't count them out. And I think, you know, they are going to be so much wealthier than every other country in the world just within a few years' time that I think starting connections with China now is just, I think it's a smart thing to do for everybody in business because this is going to be China's century.
Yes, and it's very hard to do business over there, and you need to use local partners and understand the different culture, which is very, very different. But I saw something the other day. I mean, I can't remember the statistic, but it was something like 90% of the world's computers are made in China, which didn't particularly surprise me. But then it was something like 55% of the world's shoes are made in China.
Right.
And I think the only thing that's sort of likely to derail that, having visited Japan quite a lot when the Imperial Palace in Tokyo is worth more than the whole of California on land valuations at one point, the only thing is if they've got a debt bubble and all implodes, that will actually sort of slow it down. Otherwise, yes.
Yeah, and I think that's a big risk for China because, they said, you talk about face, they love their economic growth numbers, and people talk about, you know, that there's overcapacity in so many Chinese industries, and I'm hoping that they don't have a crash and it's more of a, you know, they might go from, you know, 7% GDP growth to 3%, which I think most people in the world would love to have 3% growth. And, you know, that's, I think, probably, you know, I can't imagine that they're going to maintain this really rapid growth for a long time. But, you know, I just hope they don't try and sort of artificially maintain the 7% growth and then suddenly they go into a recession where it's, you know, 7% decline.
Yes, well, we have to see how the Mandarins manage it. As you say, plenty of times in the past, they've managed it far better than us. I think there was something like a statistic that 14th century iron production in China was never surpassed until the British Empire in the late 19th century. I mean,
oh, really?
You know, it's that kind of thing. And going back to the funny things about doing podcasts, there aren't the tenses for these kind of things. But by the time this one comes on air, I will have been about to have gone and already have gone. Touch wood to Angkor Wat, which is a temple which is a kilometre by kilometre. And I think at the time that was the largest city in the world, you know. So everything changes. I saw some program on the TV talking about our former penal colony, Australia. It was the British Empire in colour, and it's some old footage in colour, actually. It was amazing sort of seeing that kind of thing. And I'd actually forgotten myself that as recently as whatever it was, 1945, Britain ruled a third of the world's people. I mean, it's just unbelievable now.
Right. Well, you've added in India there, so you've got a big population there.
Yeah, absolutely. And recently I said that, actually, we're now down to the Isle of Wight and the Isle of Man. Someone points out the Isle of Man is independent, and actually,
Australia is still part of the Commonwealth.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a lesson that is not being unspotted by American authors, which is that America, in its imperial overreach, may be, you know, at its own stage, the Roman Empire or the British Empire, sort of cresting the wave and retreating. And I think, you know, one of the sort of worries for our kids or grandkids, which is if China gets militarily active, right, using all this huge wealth at 50 years' time. Anyway, let's not worry about that. Let's keep the much narrower focus and return much nearer home, or near the end of your business trip, to your very successful European conference. Lots of interesting things to talk about here. I've got some sort of takeaways, and you've got some takeaways and much more sort of in-depth knowledge of them. I mean, I think one thing, just to start before we get to the exciting stuff, was the, especially on the sort of first day, which may have been because I got up too early or something like that, or got out the wrong side of bed, but I found there's a certain amount of dullness creeping into a lot of the official pronouncements by some of the sort of platforms, which partly I attribute to what you're talking about, sort of, you know, just wearing sort of suits and all that kind of stuff and just growing up a little bit. But I think the other thing behind the scenes was that a lot of the platforms now are like kids trying to get to the Christmas party and not upset the teacher. And so one CEO, who's remained nameless, of course, was telling me about, I said, oh, you guys are doing nothing interesting at all as an industry. He said, oh, we've got this great product A and this great product B. I thought B was completely crazy. But anyway, we will see. He said, but I don't dare mention them because the regulators haven't regulated us yet at the moment. So it's like all the kids are behaving and trying to be quiet and not upset anybody and all that kind of thing. So yes, I think there's a bit of dullness going on. Or is this just me being grumpy old man?
Yeah. I might take issue with that a little bit.
There's some sexy stuff. We'll get into the sexy stuff.
Yeah. And I think Samir's from Funding Circle, the CEO of Funding Circle's opening keynote, I thought was fascinating.
Which is online, so people can watch it. I'll include a link in the show notes.
He had this great chart that he showed basically the balance sheet of a bank and the balance sheet of a marketplace lending platform and how different they were and how much more stable a marketplace lending platform inherently is. That's been repeated throughout this conference. But yeah, you know, I think there is an element of the fact that no one wants to state publicly anything too controversial when the FCA is in review, which they are right now. I'm obviously a little bit biased. I didn't think it was dull, but I also thought that, you know, people are being probably a little bit more cautious than they might have been if that wasn't happening, if there was no review underway. But some of the things that I think have just really struck out for me, we'll talk about Lord Turner in a minute.
Yes, he wasn't dull.
He was not dull at all.
Nobody in the audience would have thought he was dull.
Right, but I think you're talking about the importance of diversity of funding, that funding sources, that has just come up again and again and again. And the whole thing about maturity transformation, it's a weird thing, but it's banks doing maturity transformation, this industry not doing. I have seen that mentioned more at this conference than any other conference we've ever had.
And that's interesting, because every time I hear that, I think of the example, I mean, in particular of RateSet, I'm not sure they've still got this product, but it's a one-year product which was sort of funded by short-term stuff. And again, to not being rude about your conference, I've really enjoyed it. I was more reflecting on how some of the leading platforms are conducting themselves in public. And, if you took the sort of the top five, what kind of things they're saying. And one thing that always sort of just slightly irritates me in general is when there's an increasing gap between what they say in public and what they'll say in private. That's just a personal frustration, which is that it's kind of, I was really brought up in a sense, really deep-rooted from about the age of one, to tell the truth, that it starts to become too much spin, and there's been too much spin in general in the world.
I had conversations over drinks last night with a couple of different platforms that said things to me privately that they would have never said on stage.
Yes.
And it's unfortunate for us, because those things would be very, very
interesting. Exactly, yes.
But also, I get that mentality. You want to be transparent as much as possible, but for example, if someone doesn't like what a government agency is doing, are they going to say that publicly?
Yes.
Would it be smart to say it publicly? Yes, or should you keep those feelings to yourself?
Absolutely. Well, it's very interesting following on from talking about China here, because I didn't think we'd particularly have capitalism at all these days. We have a form of corporatism, but even putting that to one side, you've got 50% of the economic activity in the country is the state, and 50% is, quotes, the private sector, of which the vast majority of private sector is oligopolies, be it in telecoms or pharmaceuticals or banks. And those are oligopolies controlled by the state via regulators. So even if economic production is entirely in the private sector hands in the UK almost, actually all the power tends to lie with the state and with the regulators.
Yeah, and they will never say a bad word about them.
So they will never say a bad word about them. There's a really good paper, I'll include a link in the show notes, by an American academic last year, a very thick one, I never managed to read it all, called The Rule of Law in the Regulatory State, where he's raising lots of interesting questions about this kind of unaccountable power. So again, off the record, I was talking to some CEOs, and saying that, if you get arrested by the police, wrongful arrest, you've got a bit of a chance of getting off. You've got a bit of a chance of proving, if you're lucky, that the police have wrongfully arrested you. But put fairly bluntly, if the FCA take a hard line with your company and give you a bit of a beating and that, you ain't got a lot you can do. And again, privately, they're saying, yes. So this is a challenge for how the world is regulated at the moment. And I think from a sort of political perspective, it's not something I'm comfortable with. And again, we'll come back to Lord Turner. Maybe we should come on to him soon, otherwise I keep referencing him. But one of the key things that I was really impressed about what he was saying was that regulators are getting around to realising that the kind of the approach they had in the past was that you there's a lorry going fast down a hill, the brakes are a bit dodgy, there are not many safety barriers, so their response to that was to stuff the cab with people looking over his shoulder telling him to drive the lorry, which is absolutely how regulation has gone.
Right.
And there's a realisation that that's not a good way of doing things. It's far better that there are better crash barriers and stronger brakes.
Yes.
Which is going back to where we were. I mean, the pendulum of regulation has gone from none to far too much, So I think we're in that kind of zeitgeist at the moment.
I love that analogy, and it got a big laugh from the crowd.
Well, it's much easier when you're an ex-regulator to sort of stand on the Olympian heights and say like this.
Exactly.
When you are a regulator, you're constrained by what everyone else is doing.
right. But I think we need to address what Lord Turner said initially, because he was being quoted in the press, I would say, several hundred times since he made these remarks in February. And it was just an off-the-cuff remark at the end of an interview. And he was being misquoted, and he clarified.
For those people who lived under the stone didn't hear what he'd said, he was quoted in the press as having said that the P2P will make the last sort of 2008 crisis look like a tiny sort of thing.
They thought the bankers would look like geniuses who were in the financial crisis. And what he actually meant was, and this is actually what he said that was not included in this quote, was that individual investors lending on peer-to-peer lending platforms, they have no credit experience, they're going to make the bankers look like geniuses.
Were it to go in that direction, yes, and were it to keep going a lot, yes, so that
in 5 or 10 years' time.
Exactly, but it hasn't gone that direction. Yes. I think also he dealt with everything sort of very charmingly, because I should have mentioned earlier that the Lendit Europe is you guys in association with the P2P FA, and Christine Farnish was chairing that particular one. And so she'd had something to say when it was all over the press saying that kind of stuff. And so he told this great anecdote. So, yes, I said this, and it, you know, was sort of busy jogging backwards and contextualising it and all that kind of stuff, which he sort of just about got away with, okay, but sounded a bit defensive. But then he said, well, of course, Christine knows about this thing, because actually 5 years ago...
I didn't know this story.
She too was caught in the microphone saying that the sort of chairman of the National Association of Pension Funds or something like that was a Stalinist, and that happened to be me. So it's just such a judo throw.
Yes.
And then at the end he got asked the question by somebody, I'm not quite sure it was, I'm from the Norwegian FinTech Times or something, who asked the reasonable question to the regulator along the lines of, well, what's the point talking about the last crisis? Because the next crisis is always different. And he gave a very good answer to that kind of stuff, and some more judo throws over there, which is, in particular in the UK, the crises are always different but similar, like most things in life. And the similarity of most crises in the UK are around the unstable property market, which gets ramped up with lots of leverage and then collapses. And that's the same banking crisis we had in the 70s.
Right.
The mid-80s, the mid-90s.
And we may have again.
And we may well have again. And there's lots of fintechs, more broadly than peer-to-peer, piling into the equity for property markets, you know? And you can see the logical... And I'm a bit big, ambiguous about having these people on the show. I mean, I should have one at some point, but I'm not entirely sure it's a good thing. So if you're living in London these days, it's a nightmare. The average first-time buyer is 40 because of the crazy house prices over here. So you're trying to save up the deposit for property. Meanwhile, it keeps going up and up and up. So what you'd like to do, not helpful to P2Ps, but you'd actually like to stick it into some property. So some fintechs allowing you to do that. The problem with that is just get more of the same. What keeps happening in the UK is that more and more schemes to inflate property prices.
That is, I think, a separate issue. But what Lord Turner's point was is that we don't learn from the past very well. We need to learn from the past. And he made the point about, you know, Japan in 20 years ago or whatever. My point I wanted to get across was that, you know, Lord Turner was misquoted. He actually is quite supportive of this industry. Whether or not it's going to become a big part of financial services, he doesn't know. He says he's going to let the market decide, let the competition decide how big it gets. But there's nothing inherently wrong with the model. And the fact is that these companies are doing underwriting in a very responsible way.
Absolutely. And I think everyone should definitely check them out. I mean, Christine at the end said, and I'm quite good at absorbing very high bandwidth information, but I had felt the same thing as well. And she said it, which is that actually she's going to watch it 2 or 3 times on your channel, yes, to actually fully understand it, because it was kind of machine gun etiquette, to quote a damned album. So just picking out sort of one or two of the other points, maybe I'll just pick out a couple here. I quite liked an SME panel, and actually they were making a virtue out of being dull, and they're saying, well, actually, what we're doing in SME lending is increasingly for the larger deals is actually going and visiting the clients, and there's nothing new in that. We're just going back to the future with that one. So in a sense, going back to this fintech world, a lot of the SME lenders, not them all, probably not Funding Circle, but the ones who are doing bigger deals, they are, to my language, much more like finance houses. Used to be, Lord Turner again referred to non-bank lending. So again, and he'd also, Lord Turner made the point that, you know, with large loans, you can never do with a computer. You've always got to go and sort of see the whites of their eyes and check out the carpet tiles and all that kind of thing. And then just to finish off on the other one, which was very notable today, was Tom Blumfeld of what's now called Monzo Bank. Every time I see him talk, he's got a different one. He was called Get Mondo, then he was called Mondo, now it's called Monzo.
The D has changed to a Z, yes.
Exactly, probably Mongo next time. Mongo Jerry Bank or something like that. And Tom, as always, is a very bright guy, speaking very interestingly. Love to have him on the show sometimes, but he's kind of tuning around for what their business model is. But he told one or two anecdotes, one of which appealed to me. So for the first time in my life, I did take one of his free Mondo cards he was giving away about... He was in India on holiday recently, and the bank sort of cut off his credit card or service card, which always happens to me, and I'm thinking, oh, I better call the bank so they don't do that to me when I'm on holiday. Whereas if his Mondo card, he landed in India, about 5 seconds after he landed, his Mondo card said, oh, we know you're in India, you know, welcome to India, it's all fine, and the exchange rate you're going to get is so-and-so on all his purchases, which is incredibly impressive. And afterwards, he was surrounded by the biggest crowd that I certainly saw over the 2 days, of a whole bunch of people, including some cheeses, whose names I won't give away, but actually I was standing there, not that I'm a cheese, of people saying, oh, I'll have one.
Right, right.
He's certainly brilliant at arousing interest and arousing passion and being far from dull himself. Where it all goes to, we don't actually know at this stage.
I saw that panel as well. It was one of my favourite sessions of the whole conference, actually. And the point that he made, which I thought was fascinating, is that these payments companies and or the banks and credit card companies have such rich information which they discard, basically. They don't use. And that data is something that is valuable. And banks have all this data, all this information about your income, your expenses, your credit cards, where you spend money. And then you go to apply for a loan and they start from scratch.
Yeah. It's a whole new world. And I like the other side of the coin he was making as well, which is that going back to open APIs, PSD2, I've spoken a lot about in the podcast recently, that the banks will probably screw that up by having fairly crap APIs and not very useful information and all that kind of stuff. So that's an interesting one. So for example, when I get my MasterCard bill comes in every month, there's some long transaction ID, which means nothing to me. Every now and then I'm staring at something. I've got no idea what it was. What was this? And trying to scratch my head. And where was I on the 12th of November? And what did I buy? And what could that be? And all that kind of thing. Whereas, again, going back to enriching the data, which is one of the things he's saying about the new ones doing as well. He was saying that when you buy something with his card, you get geolocated, so it tells you precisely where you bought it. Oh, I was there. I was in the West End. Oh, yeah, that must have been a clothes shop. So those are my big ones. Which other ones haven't I mentioned, Peter?
I really enjoyed the featured panel yesterday, which had the co-founders of the top five platforms.
That was the one where you were kind enough to them to invite Kadeem Schuber, the must-read journalist from the FT Alpha.
Exactly, who has written some very aggressive columns over the last few months.
But well-researched.
Yes, well-researched, but certainly critical in many ways of the space. But he was less critical than I thought he was going to be, but I really enjoyed that panel. I think there was certainly some interplay between RateSetter and Funding Circle and others. Getting those guys on all in one place, talking about the state of the industry, talking about where, like particularly interplay between retail and institutional, talking about Brexit, talking about ISAs, I really appreciated that, and I think he did a great job in moderating, and that was one of my favorites. Another one, I always enjoy Cormac. I think his presentation, he just sort of encapsulates where we're at as good as anybody, and I think he's always colorful and interesting, and I very much enjoyed him. Boy, there's just so many more on my long list here. I'm going to have on Blend Academy, there'll be a whole wrap-up of all this fairly soon, but yeah, I think for me, the conference was definitely different than previous conferences. You know, there's definitely a certain caution. But in general, we are maturing as an industry. And I think I also felt a lot of sort of cautious optimism I felt was flowing throughout many of the presentations.
Yes, I mean, I was on your show recently and you were asking me what I thought was the advantage to P2Ps and all these kind of things and where fintech was going and all that kind of thing. And, you know, one of my angles on that was, forget all these funny words, they're just businesses. They're businesses, they've been going for a few years, a little bit of a pause, as one of them put it, and it's just a chance for them to reflect on what they're actually really good at and what people actually want to pay them money to do, like any other business. So, you know, that's where we are, and that's quite helpful. So before we wrap up the show, I'd like to thank the listeners. Without the listeners, there'd be little point in doing this. I've met plenty of them at Lendit. I'm not quite a rock star yet, but I start to get the idea that if I had 1,000 times more listeners, I might actually want to go out in dark shades. Otherwise, lots of people sort of putting their business card into my hands and thanking me. And I'd also like to thank, in particular, my brand partners for the podcast, Archover, Smart, Simple and Transparent P2P Business Lending. Loans up to £3 million for SMEs, delivering up to 7% secured and insured returns to lenders. Smart Pension, who are fast, secure and free. Check out their UK workplace pensions at autoenrollment.co.uk. And Synchron, digital business consulting and technology services for top-tier FS. From startup to 6,000 people, 16 countries and $400 million of revenue. And finally, Peter, I'd like to thank you for this massive and impressive tour of the world and give you the chance now to wave flags for the future, if you can actually, at this stage, contemplate 2017, or whether you just want to get back to your hotel room and collapse and have some beans on toast and watch a film on the TV.
No, we're going out for dinner and drinks with the Lendit team tonight, which we do after every event. But yeah, I think our next event is always what we look towards, and that's our USA event in March 6th and 7th of 2017. We're going to be back in New York at the Javits Center, which is a big exhibition center in New York where, you know, the Lendit USA conference keeps growing and growing, and we're adapting to accommodate that growth.
How many people were you this year?
We were 3,600 people, and we're expecting 5,000 in 2017.
That's a lot of sandwiches.
Yes, our food and beverage bill was monstrous, let me tell you. But anyway, we're going to be back in New York, and we're trying to do a few new things this year. We're going to have a whole segment on financial inclusion, which is a really pretty hot topic in Washington these days. It's really expanding access to credit, underserved markets, you know, small businesses, that kind of thing. We're going to be doing a whole segment on that. We're going to do pieces about insurance, which I think has a lot in common, really may end up being one of the next hot places in fintech. We're going to talk about blockchain. We've got a whole kind of staff training segment where you can bring your chief marketing officer, you can bring your general counsel, you can bring your chief investment officer, and just learning there's a whole focus on learning. We'll obviously have a lot of the similar tracks like credit risk and things like that we'll be focusing on. And we hope to have a couple of big names. We've already secured one American congressman, Congressman McHenry of North Carolina, who is probably the leading fintech congressman in the US. But we hope to have a few other really, really big names as well. So I'm excited about it. It's about 5 months away, I think, from when we're recording this. So we've got a lot of work to do, but it's going to be fun.
Great. Well, thank you very much for that, Peter. And I thoroughly recommend to people that whichever part of the world they're in, they check out Lendit. A lot of effort and a lot of time and a lot of thought and a lot of organisation goes into producing these events and putting interesting people in front of you. And the zeitgeist is always different. Every time around, every conference always has a different feel every year. And having been talking about China, in terms of the history of China, China was sort of expanded and contracted and expanded and contracted. And in 2014 in the UK, there was this very much fintech vibe that it's all fintech. So you'd have people talking about Bitcoin and blockchain or whatever at the same time. And then for the next sort of couple of years, it rather sort of fragmented into silos. But maybe now we're at the extreme of a silo. I mean, you can't just be so narrowly P2P without having direct lenders or without insurance coming. And going back to Cormac and his crazy ideas, I quite like the panel where he suggested that maybe Zopa could sell holidays and this kind of stuff. So so maybe the pendulum's moving again in terms of being over-speciated, too fitted to a small niche, and actually incorporating some other concepts going forward, another wave of innovation. So I wish you every success for 2017, Peter. And my personal hope for you is that you have some good drinks this evening and spend a few days not thinking about conferences and just manage to breathe out and recover from this one.
Yes, I hope to do that.
So thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes or your podcast app, or sign up at londonfintechpodcast.com for email alerts and new episodes. Live long and prosper.
We could sit in a bender all day, watching the firelight dance, watching the firelight dance. We could walk in the mountains before dawn, watching a happy moon ride, watching a happy moon ride. Come away from the city, but with the tarmac so dead and the people so sad. Come away from the city, but with the faces so gray, with the pain of the the mountains and the trees. Can you see what I mean? Can you see what I mean? We fit in between the earth and the sky. Kiss the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. The city goodbye. Watch the firelight dance with me. 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 Watch the firelight dance.